The author James Baldwin once wrote, "Children have never been very good at listening to their elders, but they've never failed to imitate them." Welcome to the Mumafesto, where parenting and politics combine. My name is Stella Creasy, and I'm a Labour and Cooperative MP and mother of two young children. My guest this week is Rosie Nixon, who's an author, campaigner, and the former editor-in-chief of Hello magazine. Rosie was editor of Hello between 2008 to 2023, before she stood down to go freelance. She's now qualified as a coach, editor-at-large at Hello, and runs Hello's podcast, A Good Place. She's also published four books and has campaigned for workplaces to provide more support for women during the menopause. Rosie, welcome to the Mumafesto. You wrote an article recently that basically made me want to burst into tears for feeling seen. Tell us a little bit about your work on burnout.
Oh, thanks, Stella. It's so nice to be here. And as I just told you before we press record, I'm really enjoying your podcast. I think it's very needed. And I'm glad you didn't say that you burst into tears because you realised you were in burnout, which actually happened to a number of people who messaged me after that article came out. But yes, I guess I had a moment back in October 2022 when I came very close to burnout. It wasn't actually fully fledged burnout because I didn't have all of the characteristics that the World Health Organization kind of classify as official burnout. But I've since learned so much more about it. I think I had a lot of different things, as a lot of midlife women do around this age, you know, all going on at the same time. And I've also learned a phrase recently, which I think is fantastic, called bore out. And I think I had a little bit of bore out as well.
That's what just happens in Parliament every single
yes,
day.
That's true. Like, when you if it's a very long session. Yeah. That's true. But it was a lot of things, I think, building up cumulatively over about a decade, all coming to a head. Because I think stress lives within our bodies, and stress turns into chronic stress when you never give yourself a chance to pause in between certain periods of busyness, because we're all going to have crazy times in life, aren't we? And we all go through lots of challenges. But the key thing is giving yourself a bit of recovery time, because unbeknownst to me at the time, which I feel quite silly actually now for not realizing, stress lives in your nervous system and it's going to affect you physically if you ignore the warning signs for too long. And I think as
so
women,
many,
yeah,
so
we're good at carrying on.
Yeah, read your story and read about, because essentially what you describe is that paradox where people look at other people and think they must be winning at life.
Yeah. You're
at the top of your career, you've got fantastic family, everything seems to go swimmingly. But there's this mental load ticking at the back of your head that is utterly, utterly relentless. And actually the thing that made me cry was you saying, you just wanted to cuddle your kids.
Yeah.
Because I feel that, and I think many people listening that feel that you've got 101 things you know need to happen, and 101 things need to happen for them and also for your job. And actually what you just want to do is get under a duvet with them and watch not Paw Patrol, because nobody ever wants to watch Paw Patrol.
Oh, no.
But
a nice, cozy film, and have that closeness with it and be there. And that's why I wrote that article, really, because I thought if I'm just perpetuating this image of perfection and that everything's great and I'm nailing every aspect of my life, then that isn't being real and I'm kind of part of the problem then as well. I felt that it was the moment to actually let that guard down and discuss it openly, this feeling that it turns out a huge proportion of women are silently often feeling, having to keep that image up at work. And it eventually takes a toll on your health if you don't kind of keep a check on it, as I discovered. And that was a real shock to my system. Somebody that had never had a day off work, really, was barely ill, literally had to listen to the doctor like a child when I was being instructed to come off my email, to tell my work that I was signing myself off. I didn't even know what the process was, really, because I hadn't really ever had to go through that for myself, although I had dealt, you know, seen it in other people and managed in an HR way. And I actually asked if I could go and see occupational health, which to most people is a kind of warning bell. The minute you get, you know, an appointment with occupational health, you're on your way out, kind of thing. But I really felt passionately that, no, I need to get to the bottom of this, because I know it isn't like me. But I cannot physically just keep going and keep all those balls in the air anymore. It's enough.
And what was that like for your family?
Well, the subsequent decisions that I made to look at my working life and to make some revisions to it were met with absolute joy from my family. And on the day that I told my sons, which is not until at least about a year and a half, I think it was later, because I did in the end return to Hello magazine, where I'd been working as editor in chief in another kind of role for 3 days a week. And I retrained, I'm sure we'll go into all of that and what I did in that interim period. But then when I did make the decision, actually, I need to move on to my next chapter with my career. And this is a bit where the bore out aspect came in, that I'd just been doing something for a very long time. I needed a change. I needed to learn again. I needed to reconnect with some real passions for me. And when I told my boys that that was the plan, they cheered. I mean, that was their reaction. And they said, right, so you'll be around a lot more. And I said, yes. And they were over the moon. And so was I. And I knew without a shadow of a doubt, I was making the right decision.
So how do you think we got here then? Because I think your story and that sense of trying to juggle, trying to do everything, but also trying to be the best mum that you can be. And I imagine you probably also wanted a bit of a social life at some point.
Totally. Well, we want it all. But the problem is we cannot do it all. I mean, I just think that that is absolutely impossible. And for me, when I became a mother over 10 years ago, it was a long time coming. You know, I desperately wanted to be a mum, and it took a number of years to get there, and lots of investigations and things, and unexplained infertility, which is just a horrible thing to be told. And then finally it did happen, and I was over the moon. And luckily I did have a very supportive boss who was a family man. And I'll never forget, actually, when I went off on my first maternity leave for my first son, he sent me a text message which said, enjoy this precious time. Take the time you need, because this is such a unique period in life. And I cannot tell you, I mean, that's actually a very progressive text to get from a male boss. And I know lots of women have very different stories. And that stuck in my mind. And I have always sent anybody that I've been managing that goes off on maternity leave a very similar text message, because I know how much it means. He didn't even want to call me to interfere, because you think, you know, you're in this very baby bubble. But perhaps the pressure came on me. You know, I did have my two boys very close together, and I actually went back early from maternity leave after the second, because I felt the pressure that the business kind of needed me, and I wanted to hold on to my role there. And I think we're, again, in a slightly different place now, or very recently, with the part of the flexible working bill. I know we're still working on some greater components for it, hopefully to come in future years, which will help mothers and, well, all people, I believe, going through any kind of challenge enormously. But at the time, that flexible working wasn't an option. And I went back to work early, sort of after about 5 months maternity leave, which I'm still a little bit resentful of, if I'm honest. Looking back, I would have liked to have taken longer, but I did feel that perhaps my, you know, role and career was going to suffer if I didn't. And then was on that treadmill ever since, really, for the last 10 years of trying, of going out in the evenings, as we all know that it's not just a 9-to-5 job in the media world, as it is in politics as well. There are lots of evening events. You're basically on call 24/7. And we've become a fully digital world in that time as well, which adds further pressures. And it's almost like a pressure cooker of keeping going, running on adrenaline, taking all the supplements, trying to look after yourself, trying to keep a social life going as well, trying to have a healthy relationship with your husband, trying to fulfill family roles. It is a lot. And never feeling able to say, do you know what? I think I'm struggling for the fear that it will all crumble and the house of cards will collapse.
But I think this is one of the challenges, because I think if we are honest, it is women still who are being put in that position. And I see very much a generation of women who, like you say, we were taught and encouraged to have it all. There were no boundaries. There were no barriers that we could face and we should face, and that those should be taken down. The flip side of that is that you can't stop, because if you stop, then somehow you're no longer committed. And as you say, very often in lots of jobs, it's funny, you talk about having to go to evening events, and that most jobs aren't just 9 to 5. There's all sorts of social life around them that does influence your ability to get off.
Of course there is.
And I recently talked about that as a motherhood penalty, and got a huge amount of abuse that for women who are trying to see their children keep going, because we're also trying to show that we're committed to our roles, something has to give. And I think what you're talking about is what ends up giving. I'd be really interested to hear whether you've spoken to men who feel that they're in the same position.
Well, interestingly, yes, like on the burnout thing, I think it's, you know, it depends on, obviously, every family has a different setup. And, you know, in mine, I was the kind of major earner for a long time. And then while I was supporting an entrepreneurial husband, and then that has changed in recent years, and we've managed to kind of evolve together. But it's been a constant learning process. And, you know, before reinventing my career, we had to sit down together and have the serious conversation about the financial picture, because it's absolutely mad to think that you could just reinvent your career at any age without considering all of that. And it was a long process. But certainly, I think burnout, I mean, it's, you know, the occupational health doctor said to me, you know, why do you think people burst a blood vessel or have a heart attack playing tennis, you know, in their 50s? It's because that stress is living there. And you have to ask yourself, who is actually putting that stress on you as well? I think sometimes it's very easy to go to blame our employers, but actually a lot of that pressure was coming from within myself, from an unrealistic societal expectation that I should be able to do it all with aplomb and look like I had just had a blow dry in the process. I mean,
I'm increasingly feeling that if I just ban from Instagram all the videos mums doing like really great crafting with their kids.
Yes. Oh God, because there's nothing to make you feel like you're losing.
Baking, whipping up a batch of cookies that are very healthy
and look amazing.
Yeah, and that the kids love. I tried it the other one that was, because I feel the constant mum guilt if I've got to do more with my children.
Yes, I know.
And they were so disgusting. Because
I know. Well, sometimes we're not very good at that.
She said, cookies are better when they have sprinkles on, aren't they? I was like,
yes, they are. Or when they're bought from a shop. Yeah. Oh, dear. Well, you tried, you know. We don't have to win at everything, though.
I think the algorithm of life is very geared towards women feeling, like I say, that they have to keep going and you can't stop. And your story is so powerful about having just looked at your life and gone, actually, even though I'm doing something that people would say is the pinnacle of your career, this isn't working for me. And that's okay to say, because you're still winning at life to make that choice too.
Well, absolutely. But then in the same breath, I didn't want to be another statistic, you know, of a woman of sort of in her late 40s, kind of perimenopausal age, juggling family life, you know, and a knackered mum that drops out of the workforce, potentially at the top of her game, and sort of disappears. Because the stats are really quite shocking around that. Mm. And we're losing these vital, experienced, intelligent women from senior roles right across the country. So it wasn't a case of disappearing. It was refashioning a career that was going to be better in line with where I'm at this stage of my life. And now I have to say I am super busy again, but I don't feel stressed. I know my warning signs. I know I can't do it all. I've just taken somebody on to assist me with a project that I'm really excited about, because I don't want to go down that route again, you know, and I know those warning signs.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned there, obviously, again, for women in particular, and I really pay tribute to colleagues of mine like Carolyn Harris and also Carolyn.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the women who've put the menopause on the national agenda, because I don't think it's accidental that just at that point where possibly those pressures are super, super concentrated, you know, family life, work life.
Yeah.
fighting the patriarchy, because that's always what we're all trying to do, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah.
But also just at that point, you're going through another change in life. Just talk to us a bit about how you've experienced that and the work that you've been doing on that too.
Well, absolutely. And I'm such a fan of Carolyn Harris and all the people in the public eye that you've mentioned that are championing that cause, because I think it's really important that we amplify the voices of midlife women, that we start having this conversation about the menopause that is not taught at school, you know, that we think so much about the beginning of our reproductive life, but then absolutely nothing is really known or wasn't when we were growing up about this bit that happens now when your periods stop and your hormones kind of dip and you experience all kinds of symptoms that can make you feel quite out of body. And for some women, they're really, really debilitating. And I think it's fantastic that that conversation is being opened up and that there are things in place like the Menopause Workplace Pledge, which I championed at Hello, and we joined forces with Wellbeing of Women, brilliant women's health charity that you probably know, that Carolyn's very involved with as well, where I'm proud to be an ambassador. And the Menopause Workplace Pledge was to encourage companies to sign up to say that they recognise this time of life for women, and that they would be supportive in sort of requests that a woman might have to make her working life possible through that. So it wasn't anything really kind of, you know, seriously demanding on an employer. It was just an understanding, because the thing with the perimenopause and menopause is that it affects every woman completely differently, and some women just go through it barely even noticing, you know, and others it can be really horrific, and they can be suffering with symptoms for 10, you know, even longer, you know, in years, and leave their careers, and families can break down. So I think opening up that conversation into the public domain is really great, but also understanding that there is not a one size fits all. HRT works for some. There are lots of natural ways to cope with menopause symptoms as well. And I don't think we should be too militant about pushing one thing or the other. The fact is that we're talking about this, and that women now feel equipped, hopefully, to go to their GP or to call up the surgery and say, can I have an appointment with the surgery's menopause expert and try to get to the bottom of what's going on. But for me, I think I'm at the beginning of that journey. So, yeah.
But again, it's so powerful because you're talking about very clearly the impact it has on workplaces when we don't recognise the changes and the challenges that particularly women still are expected to manage. I think we've just got to the point where, like, nurseries have worked out that maybe not calling the mum every single time a child is ill first is progress. And we're just starting to recognise that maybe you're going to lose people if your workplace doesn't work for somebody, if you need, you know, if you've got experiencing the menopause and you need to change the way in which you're working and there isn't that flexibility to do it.
Yeah.
It does feel like we're a long way from understanding why 51% of the population isn't being able to realise their talent in a way that they could do if we worked in a different way.
Absolutely. And that inequality is still there, because there's only so much we can do in our own sort of with allyship within our own communities. I think women are very good at doing that. You know, we're a really powerful force at supporting each other within the workplaces or the communities that we operate. But then when things are not, and we're not being listened to at a governmental level, that is really tough to ever see any proper, meaningful, long-term change.
Have you ever experienced any negativity in talking about these issues and talking about burnout?
I think I've been pretty lucky in a way, because I've always worked for women's magazines where predominantly it's kind of 90% female workforce. Or certainly, though, within that, you know, there are lots of different types of women that you're working with, and sometimes it is harder to, and we're all going through so many things, you know, fertility issues, and, you know, or deciding to be childless and really putting the focus on career, and those that are trying to juggle family life. There are lots of varying degrees, so it's being mindful of that as well, not assuming that every woman wants the same thing, I think is really important. I do feel, though, that probably it would have been helpful if I could have opened a conversation around flexible work before I hit burnout, you know, close to burnout, and it was physically something that needed to happen. And that forced the change. And I do think, you know, that we are making great strides at a governmental level in terms of the flexible working bill. But I think there is still a long way to go until the onus is on the employer to, you know, by default, take that responsibility.
I think there's such a powerful message to say to women, actually, it's not you, it is the environment that you're being asked to operate in.
I guess my worry is
what you're saying, if we want a more supportive environment, especially I need my environment to be more women dominated, because I work in a place that is very much still dominated by men.
Yes.
You know, the bars stay open late, but there isn't much flexible working, let's put it that way.
No, that's it. And if that is brought in, as you know, a bill is passed, you know, which makes the default on the employer, then you can open that conversation with much more confidence than you might otherwise. I do remember, actually, you just made me think, when I went back from my second maternity leave, asking to work Mondays from home. And this was kind of pre-pandemic, when there wasn't hybrid working at all.
Nobody knew about Zoom. Which seems mad.
I know, crazy, isn't it? I mean, that is one benefit to have come out of a really horrible time. And I remember asking if I could work from home on a Monday purely. I mean, my kids were still in childcare. It was that I could do the pickup from the nursery and be able to give them their dinner, you know, the right time and be there properly for bath time. Because when you were finishing work at 6 on just a normal night, which most nights were later than that, and then factoring in travel time, you'd often get home, miss bath time, you know, these really precious bonding moments with your kids. And that was, I felt really guilty, and it was quite a difficult conversation to have. I was allowed to do it, I think probably because I was in a very senior role. I think it's much easier to advocate for yourself when you are in a management role than those that are not. So I think, I really, really hope that the flexible working bill is going to change things enormously in the years to come, although we've still got a number of years to wait. Well, or not, hopefully not.
You use the word there, it's a very powerful word that lots of women use all the time, guilt. They feel guilty. You feel guilty not being, like I say, I look at all those Instagram videos and think, I'm a terrible mum because I'm not doing all this crafting.
Yeah.
Pass the pipe cleaners. I've got to make a butterfly.
Yes, I know. Or not just guilt, but actually the physicality of, like, I really want to be doing this. You know, I really wanted to become a mother. It was hard. It took a long time. You know, I don't want to just not take that, you know, just take that for granted. I really want to appreciate it. And now, as the, you know, they're growing up fast, and you realize, wow, it is just a moment in time, and things constantly change, and the requirements that you have are different, and the childcare issues are constantly evolving. And just to have that flexibility, I mean, flexibility is everything. That's the key word, I think, with regards to parenting and work.
And what would you say to somebody who would be listening to this, who does feel like that mental load of, I've got to be on top of everything at work and going somewhere in my career. Yeah. I've got to be on top of being a present parent. I can't be too cross with my partner, about my relationship with my kids.
Oh, God.
What would you say to somebody in that position?
Gosh, well, I'd want to give them a big hug, you know, because I know that they're probably feeling on the edge a lot of the time. But I really would ask them to think very carefully about this, because it will start to affect physical health if you don't for long enough. And that self-compassion and listening to that inner voice is not a vanity or something that you should feel guilty about. It's actually integral and essential for your own sanity and your own physical health. So I would say to them, I mean, in a way, I wish that I had gone to the doctor and explained some of these feelings, because it would have given me a bit of protection, and perhaps in opening up that conversation at work, because it is helpful sometimes to go and see a GP, and there is lots of support available. I mean, I was prescribed sertraline, which I'm not ashamed to say really helped me manage my feelings of overwhelm. And it doesn't have to be a long-term thing. It can help you sort of get back on your feet again. But having that chance to pause is just so critical and we don't allow ourselves that, or we feel guilty if we do. You know, that chance to pause, even if it's just a couple of nights away with your old friends or something, to just talk about these feelings and to get away from the day to day and start to perhaps, you know, ruminate some plans of the tweaks that you might need to make before it becomes too much.
So tell us a bit about where you're at now and what the consequence of being able to take that step back and make that difference to your life has been.
Yeah, well, now, as I described in that Telegraph article, I consider what happened to me not a breakdown, but a breakthrough. And I'm very thankful in a way that it did happen, because it was the wake up call that I needed. Because I had been ignoring that little voice inside that had been saying for the last couple of years, look, I don't think this is working the way it once did. I think our values change as we get older. Our needs are different. You know, we look and feel different, and that's okay. That's moving into a new chapter of life. That's very normal. And actually, but it's the navigating it and the negotiating and all the conversations that you have to have with yourself and potentially with employers and other key components of your life that are the really difficult thing to navigate. So now I'm really passionate about helping midlife women navigate transitionary periods. Part of my sort of the change in my working life was also a desire to learn again, which is where the bore out bit came in. I think I've been doing something for a very long time. I've been putting a magazine to bed every week. It was a similar sort of content and we were doing really well. You know, I got to Hello to be top of the weekly magazine market, which is an amazing achievement for the whole team. But I've just been doing it for a very long time. So I had this desire to learn again. I'd always been interested in coaching, having been coached myself and liked the vocabulary that coaches use. And it seemed to call to me when I was having my the weeks I had off when I was suffering or on the road to burnout, and all the podcasts I gravitated towards were coaching ones. And I thought I just need to retrain again. So I did a course and got my diploma in coaching. It's a 6-month course and it gave me such a new energy. I met a whole bunch of other people that were studying to do this. They didn't care about what was going on in the royal family or which showbiz weddings I'd been to. It was all about learning this new skill set.
Oh, come on, somebody must.
Well, no, I mean, we were too busy. We were too busy in seminars. And the self-awareness piece was obviously huge because I learned so much about myself, but also really felt like, God, this is something I'd really, really like to do. So I sort of coached myself out of my job as well. And then, you know, gradually peeled back the days at Hello and went to talk to my boss about it, you know, eventually. And I described it as, you know, our conscious uncoupling, which was the term that Gwyneth Paltrow used. But actually, I think it's a really good term to use in the sense of careers as well, and telling your boss that actually it's been great. I have loved my career at Hello, but I'm ready to do something new. And that's okay. You know, actually, nobody's died. It's all fine.
The little voice that you have in the back of your head. So when I was younger, I used to have Keris Matthews in my head. Oh, come on, you can stay out one more hour. You only need 4 hours of sleep, it's fine. Now I feel like I have Doc Cotton in my head from EastEnders.
Oh, really?
Oh, that will never work.
Oh, no, yeah. No, you need to flip that. Yeah, you've got to turn that on their head.
I need to find like maybe Taylor Swift or somebody back in.
You do. Well, maybe I've got a bit of Gwyneth Paltrow then. Yeah.
I don't think me and Gwyneth, I've seen you know.
Yeah, I know. I do like that term though. Yeah. Does it not? No, you haven't got that burning in the background on your bookshelf. I can see that. But yeah, it was a conscious sort of, I need to end this chapter. I need to move into a new one. It's going to be okay. We're doing all the financial workings out. Of course, it's still a little bit scary when you actually hand in your notice. But by that point, I had other things bubbling away because I wasn't silly. You know, I needed to tee up other work. And there's a bit of a transitionary period in making all of that happen. And I knew what I needed to earn per month to make it work for my family and my mortgage, etc. And it was possible to navigate in small steps. So this whole process was a couple of years to get to the point I'm at now when I can fully talk. I couldn't talk about my burnout. And actually the first draft that I wrote of that article for The Telegraph, oh my God, it was like a therapy session. I was in bits, just reliving it all and getting it all down. It was really hard. And I couldn't talk to anyone about it really for quite a long time. But now I've gained my voice in that area. I've been over it and over it, which I think is really important. I understand it. I understand myself much more. And it's like a period of enlightenment, really.
That's such a powerful thing. This podcast is obviously called The Mummifesto. Mm. Terrible pun, we know. But it is about the things that we need to make sure are on the agenda, because we've got a general election coming up. We've got that opportunity for change. Knowing what you know now about the concept of burnout, about how we can better support women as they hit midlife in the workplace, what would you want to see on the agenda? Because as you say, we've talked a lot about women trying to manage their experiences, but actually that environment. What would you want to put in the Mummifesto?
Gosh, well, I've got a kind of list of things. We haven't even got onto half of them. My other thing that I was thinking about as well was just this week seeing that terrible sort of vitriol that Declan Rice, the footballer's wife, Lauren Fryer, has received, and what's going on in the online world and the lack of kindness that we see there, and how this is affecting women and girls in a huge way. You know, I've also got kids who are going to be going to secondary school soon. I'm thinking about smartphones and how I'd love to see them banned for under 16s, because it would make it so much easier for all of us as parents to know that they weren't going to be facing, you know, potentially harmful content or on social media from a young age. And we've talked a bit about the flexible working bill. I think I would like to see that sort of properly, you know, bolstered, so that the onus is on the employer with regards to that. And the occupational health offering, as well, as I mentioned to you, has got a really bad rep. And I think for most people, the thought of going to see occupational health is a bad thing, because they're going to be on the side of the employer and they're somehow going to find a way that you were not competent at your job and you're going to be managed out of a role. I mean, that is the assumption lots of people come to. But if there was access perhaps to that, perhaps a more kind of less aligned to the employer kind of health service available, I think that would be really helpful to be able to step in, because it is very, very stressful trying to manage your career when you're suffering with mental health issues and physical health issues. So I don't know which one of those you'd like to take. That is a whole manifesto.
More constructive list than just banning Instagram craft videos for kids, which probably feels a little bit OTT.
That could be on there as well, Stella, definitely.
I just need to learn to get over all the PVA glue stuck to my tables now.
Oh, yeah. You need a wipe clean tablecloth.
If only I knew. I'm going to add it to my mental load.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'll get one sent to you. Somebody will.
That might be the point of burnout.
It's too much. Well, you say that. The wipe clean tablecloth. Yeah. That could be the one thing that tips you over the edge. But for many women, there is a breaking point. And it seems silly that thing that it is. But, you know, when it is thing after thing, there is only so much we can take.
But that's why it's so brilliant. And I hope people listening to this will take so much heart from you, that actually people are talking about the pressure we put women on from a number of different directions, especially as they hit middle age. And that rather than saying that somehow they can't cope with the heat of the kitchen, we need to change what we ask of them. Yeah. Because otherwise we're going to lose brilliantly talented people. And your story and the work that you're doing is really inspiring, that it is possible to find a way through that. So thank you so much for coming on the Mummifesto today.
You're really welcome. I've really enjoyed it. I think just one final thing that I would say as well, because you've talked about the pressure being heaped on mums and women and, you know, I would say also remember that success is defined by you and only you. Just remember that, you know, actually forget societal expectations. you are the judge of what is successful. And if that is never making a cookie with your children ever again, or ever owning some glitter glue, then that is your success.
Please don't tell me that glitter glue exists, because the amount of glitter I've tried to mix with PVA in order to make the butterfly look like the picture, that life is definitely too short for that.
But I think it is
very powerful. And I do think men feel pressure too, because they don't get to spend as much time with their kids, maybe not doing Instagram crafting activities.
Yeah.
But what's so important about what you're talking about is we have to change the way in which we work in order to be able to live.
Absolutely. And we do need support
to do that too.
Me too. Thanks so much, Stella.
Thanks, Rosie. I really hope you've enjoyed listening to today's episode of The Mamafesto and Rosie's really powerful story about burnout, bore out, and why we should be doing more to support women, especially in the middle of their lives in the workplace, so that we're not asking them to choose between their working lives and their family lives or their health. If you want to find out more about the work that Rosie's been doing in her campaigns, please do check out my social media. In the meantime, I'm off to doom scroll Instagram for more art crafting activities I'm not going to do with my children. Hope you've enjoyed today. Please do listen to the next episode of The Mamafesto.